It's time to get started for our Wildlife Board meeting. We welcome you all here. Start by introducing our board members. We have Jake Albrecht from the Southern Region to my left here, then Bill Fenimore from the Northern Region, Calvin Crandall from the Central, Ernie Perkins from the Northern Region, myself, Del Brady from the Northeast Region. We have Director Karporowicz and John Baer from the Central Region and Mike King from the Southeast Region. Introducing our rack chairs, we have Steve Flinders here from the Southern Region, Darris Jones from the Southeast Region, Fred Oswald from the Northern Region, Central. Kevin Christofferson substituting for the Northeast Region, and then Robert Burns for the Northern Region. And we have the two young ladies, Stacy Coons and Luann Petrovich, helping us to the side. Welcome you here. We'll start with, let me say, if you do have a comment that you want to make a comment, if you'll fill out the comment card over here and turn it in, and we'll call you at that time. If you do wish to make a comment as an individual, we'll give you 3 minutes. Representing an organization, we'll give you 5 minutes. With that, Ty, we'll turn to our agenda. Do we have any revisions or changes to our agenda, or are we accepted as is?
A motion to accept agenda as is.
I'll second that.
In motion made and seconded to accept the agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. That of the minutes. Any changes to the minutes? Had a chance to review the minutes?
I sent one change in by email. It was relatively minor. Great set of minutes.
Okay.
Hearing nothing, I'll make a motion. We accept the minutes.
Have a motion to accept the minutes.
Second. I'll second that.
Calvin seconds. Minutes been motion made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Well, it's unanimous. Now we will go to the old business or action log with Ernie Perkins.
Mr. Chair, we had the first six items on the action logs: private landowner programs, laser sighting devices, 9 mile boundary creek, range creek, the general season open bull hunt north of 491, antler restrictions and surrendering of individual permits were discussed yesterday. I believe the consensus of the board is that those were all dealt with adequately in our discussion. Is there any item of those six items that any board member wants to retain open or discuss? Is not so. I would move that, or I'd like a motion to delete all those six items off of the action log and consider them completed.
So moved.
Second. John Baer, has motion been made to delete those items from the action log? Been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous. Thank you. Now we'll go to Director Karporowicz for a DW update.
Okay. Since we last met, we've had our big game hunting seasons. A lot of reports of nice animals taken around the state. Some of the people in this room took some of those nice animals. And the deer hunt, while we don't have our final information, our checking station showed that success was probably down in the northern part of the region and stable in the northern part of the state, and stable to increasing a little bit in the rest of the state. A few more older age class in the bucks in the harvest, but still nothing to brag about and long ways to go. The good news is there's lots of good work going on right now. We've had a great fall of habitat work, of seedings and plantings around the state. We had good weather and soil conditions to get a lot of work done. Now we just need a little precipitation to fall on it and a good spring again next year, and it'll be off and running. So we've had a good year of habitat work. We had a good spring, a lot of forage on our winter ranges. There should be adequate there for the big game animals this winter, barring some unforeseen bad winter. We should be in good shape going into the winter. The animals are in great shape going into the winter, and that's really important. A lot of highway fencing projects are continuing to take place. You've probably noticed around the state in places like Spanish Fork Canyon and Parley's Canyon and Salina Canyon, a lot of fence going up, a lot of bypass structures being built to move animals from one side of the freeway to the other, and we appreciate UDOT working with us on that to get that work done. As you know, we've bumped up our money for predator control. This year there will be about $700,000 of division funds transferred to Wildlife Services for coyote control. They did a lot of good work this last late winter and spring with some extra money we gave them, and they have this new money in their budget, and they're ready to go to work this winter on the priorities areas that we've identified with them. We are also on the verge of starting a new research project on the Monroe unit to look at fawn mortality and the relationship between predators and predator control and fawn mortality. That'll be a major effort involving two universities and numerous researchers to once and for all determine how effective our predator control efforts are on increasing fawn production. So if I had to sum that all up, this is a good year to be a deer. It's a bad year to be a coyote. So that's all good news, and lots of good work being done around the state, and we appreciate our partners with the federal agencies and all those that are part of our watershed initiative and all of the people that are contributing these programs to make them happen. I'm confident that in the long run it'll pay off in a big way, and that we're doing the right things. We just need to do more of the right things. And so we're optimistic that we're making good steps to help recover our deer herd and to make healthier range lands and to deal with the management issues with deer. So that's all I have on big game. Unless you have any questions, I'm going to move on to fish. As you know, for the past year, we've been involved in an audit of several division programs, three programs in particular, the Conservation Permit Program, the CWMU program, and our Fish Hatchery program. The audit is now a public document. It's available online for anyone that wants to look at it. It's a fairly brief report. Doesn't take too long to look through it. Essentially, they started with the conservation permit program. They didn't find any problems there. They felt like it was a good program and that money was being well spent on good projects. And so they didn't have any specific recommendations in changing the conservation permit program. They also looked briefly at the CWMU program. They felt like it was a good program, and they only had one recommendation come out of that. They said that the division should look at the split of the permits, the public-private split, and that was the only recommendation that came out of that. The rest of the audit pertains to our fish hatchery program, where they spent most of their time. They really dug deep into our hatchery operations. We appreciate the way they looked in detail at everything we're doing in regards to our hatcheries. We have a large hatchery program in Utah, probably as big as any in the West. It's a great program, we have been, over the past few years, looking for efficiencies in that program as well. We feel like the audit helped us identify some other places where we could be more efficient, and that so that we can make our dollars that are getting kind of sparse go farther. And so we intend to take all of the recommendations, and there's quite a few recommendations in regards to hatcheries. I won't go through all of them, but we view all of those recommendations as being productive, and will help us be more efficient in our hatchery system. And we've already started implementing them. We've met with our hatchery managers in the last week and are moving forward with them. I just want to put the whole hatchery system in perspective, though. You know, in 2005, we had two or three hatcheries down with whirling disease. We produced 800,000 pounds of fish that year. That was also the year that our fishing numbers of fishermen hit bottom at 240-something thousand. No. 440, right, Greg? 440,000. Our hatchery guys worked real hard to increase the production, and we've worked real hard to get those hatcheries back online. In 2010, our hatchery folks produced 1.34 million pounds of fish. They did that without a license increase. They did it without a lot of new help. They worked real hard. And as a result of all of that, we added about 100,000 fishermen to the state and brought the new revenue we needed to pay for that added expansion in the hatchery program. So I want to publicly acknowledge our hatchery people and how hard they worked and the great job they're doing. And when you see one of our hatchery people, pat them on the back and tell them good job, because they've done a heck of a job over the past 6 years. And we can certainly improve and we can be more efficient, but these guys have worked real hard to provide a high-quality product for the fishermen of the state of Utah, and it's paying off in a big way, with many thousands of more people having the opportunity to have great fishing. And fishing has been very good in Utah through this fall. Those of you that have fished places like Strawberry Reservoir or Lake Powell know just how phenomenal it's been. So I just wanted to publicly acknowledge our hatchery workers that are doing a great job. On a not-so-bright note, we continue to see budget cutting at the federal level affecting our budget. We just lost $1 million or so in our walk-in access grant, which is going to be really difficult to replace. That's on top of about $3.5 or $4 million of other federal cuts and loss of revenue in DJ and PR. So we're going to have to continue to tighten our belts around here. You've probably seen some articles in the paper of late. The division is not proposing a license increase this year. We have a budget surplus of restricted dollars. These are sportsmen's dollars. It's sportsmen's money that we hold in reserve for tough times and for emergency situations, and we intend to get through the next year relying on part of that. We always want to retain a significant balance in that budget so that we have money for emergencies. They crop up periodically where we need money really quick, like winter deer feeding, fish disease outbreaks. There's just lots of things that can come up in a hurry that we need funds in reserve. So we intend to get through the next year without asking sportsmen for an increase, but over the next year we're going to have to be talking about doing something in 2013. The division has been responsible, and we're not just asking for new revenue without tightening our belts. I think I've mentioned before, we've cut $3.5 million out of our 2012 budget and we've eliminated 25 FTEs, and we're just going to be as efficient as we possibly can and still maintain the services that that we know need to be done. I don't know of a time when there's a bigger need to do things like our habitat work, highway fencing, predator control, and yet funds are pretty tight. So the needs are great, and the revenues are declining, and that's got us concerned. But fortunately, we have this surplus that'll help us get through. I view it as a sportsman surplus. It's their money, and we're going to use it to benefit programs that help sportsmen and help our wildlife. And then we're going to have to, in 2013, talk to the sportsmen about some additional revenue. So that's where we're at. It's like anything else we do in wildlife business. There's good news and bad news, and we just keep moving forward and doing the best we can. And I just want to acknowledge all our great people that are working so hard to make this happen. It's really unparalleled in the West. No other state has a habitat program like we do. No other state invests in predator control like we do. No other wildlife agency or highway department has got the massive effort going right now of fencing like we do, and the research efforts are significant. So our people are doing a really good job right now, and it's sometimes a thankless job. Our folks get a lot of criticism, but they're doing great things, and from my perspective, I couldn't be prouder of them. So that's all I wanted to say on the update today, and I'll answer any of your questions about other things that are hanging out there.
Any questions?
Just a question on the funding of your hatchery that is in the northern eastern part of the state, where you have matching funds from the federal government. Is anything gone any further with that?
I think you're referring to the Jones Hole hatchery. It's okay. A federal hatchery. They produce a lot of fish that go in our state waters, particularly Flaming Gorge and in the northeastern region. It is on the chopping block. We don't know where that's going to end up. If that hatchery gets closed down, it'll be really problematic for us to make up that loss of fish. So we're hoping the federal government doesn't cut too deep and that they will keep that hatchery open. That is a mitigation hatchery that was built to mitigate for Flaming Gorge Reservoir, and we feel like they have a responsibility to keep that open. We used to get some other federal money into our hatchery, though, that we've lost about $300,000 into our other hatcheries. And so we are dealing with less revenue. And what's amazing is on top of that, we increased our fish production because we've made it a priority and we've got good people that got the work done. So,
any other questions? Not, I'll move on. I need to back up just a minute. Ernie Perkins has advised me one thing we need to go back to on the action log.
Yeah, I apologize. We had a big discussion yesterday on the buck doe ratios, and based upon that discussion and the general feel of how I think it went, I'd like to make a motion for the action log that we ask DWR to bring out a more flexible general season deer unit buck to doe ratio proposal or alternatives versus the current general season deer unit standard of 18 to 25 bucks per 100 does. This proposal to be taken to the RACs and board by May 2012.
Had a motion made and seconded to go back to the DWR and ask them to update or revisit that buck-to-doe ratio on the general units. All in favor?
Could I have a little discussion?
Some discussion?
Yes.
Go ahead, Jay.
Just a little background for some of the other board members on that. About 2 years ago, we were sitting here in a meeting, and the room was packed with lots of disgruntled hunters that wanted to change. And I remember a couple of the board members saying to the division, we ask for a change, and if you don't change it, we're going to change it for you. Last year, at this same board meeting at this same time, is when that proposal went through. We went to unit by unit hunting. The division came up with a couple of alternatives for us to choose from. And one of those that was attached to the unit by unit was the $18 to $25 per 100 does. Now, I'm not against changing numbers on unit by units to match what we need to do and to put opportunity in the field and help with revenue and different things that we do. But it's just kind of peculiar that when we get three or four new board members that we're switching back to a new system without any respect maybe for the ones who fought for it in the previous meetings. You know, we had a lot of people show up at some of our meetings and they put a lot of pressure on different people in all the regions for a change, and that's what they wanted. And I see a change not only from the way people feel in the northern part of the state as the way they feel in the southeast or in the central. They just have different aspects. So if we're going to do this, I would ask the division to look at those, how people feel in their areas, not just as $15, $14, $17, or whatever it is. But look at all those aspects of what people really want in their region before they take it out to the racks.
Hey, John?
I kind of want to get on board with what Jake's saying. I'm not at all opposed, and me and Ernie have had very lengthy discussions about a more flexible system as far as buck doe ratios. And the more I talk to the division personnel and pretty much everybody, I'm not sure, a cookie cutter approach across the board is the way to go. I hope this doesn't turn into, and I don't think it is, I don't think that's the intent, that it doesn't turn into the new system versus the old system. Are we going to go back to the way it was? Are we going to stick to our guns? I think we need to really look at taking the 30 unit system. How do we make it work? You know, if we don't have $18 per 100 does as it sits now, if we're going to change that, you know, I think there needs to be good reason. And, you know, obviously those reasons can be financial, biological, social, whatever. So I think, and I would hope that everybody that's here or listening would understand this is not, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ernie, this is not a new system versus old system vote. That's not really what we're looking at. We are taking another step with the new system, with the 30 regions, new buck doe ratio system, and trying to make that a little more workable and maybe look at improving that, not doing away with it. I don't know what happened last night, but about 8:30, my phone exploded with people saying that they'd heard we were restoring all these lost tags and going back to the way. That's not the case. We're looking to improve on the system that was implemented. And I would, moving forward, that's my understanding. Before we vote on that, I would just hope that we could all agree to that or be on the same page.
So what's your motion? What's the intent? Just to give the division more flexibility within these units instead of setting it at a hard number, give some flexibility in between them?
Yeah. Per the discussion yesterday, we basically got a current standard for every general season deer unit in the state from 18 to 25. The impact of that, among other things, is that you can't increase a permit on any unit until it's into limited entry quality hunting. You got to go over 25 before you can add one single permit on a unit anywhere in the state. We also had, as Jake described a few minutes ago, a lot of regional variation in what the inputs were. And we had a number of different inputs that in some cases were not, the decision didn't really approach those inputs that came in. So in view of some of the things that have come out since a year ago, request is merely for a reconsideration to go back through the public process and look at alternatives that might provide a little more flexibility and that might go well through the public process. I think that's, I'm not looking for a revolution.
No, just
not looking to end unit by unit.
It's just to give some flexibility with the numbers within the units.
Improve flexibility on the numbers and maybe a reconsideration of what did the public really tell us and what did the RACs tell us.
So if I understand the motion right, just so we're all on the same page, what I heard is you'd like the division to look at those buck doe ratios in light of our new 30 unit program, evaluate it, see if we can't build a little more flexibility in that. It's pretty rigid right now with a statewide standard, and we'll essentially bring back dual proposals because the management plan will not have been amended. We have to make a proposal based on the current management plan and then perhaps an alternative with some more flexibility in it. So when we come back in the spring, what you'll see is two proposals, and then the plan will have to be amended before you go ahead with permit numbers.
Let me say one thing. The way I interpret what we're doing is that after yesterday's discussion, we're just asking the DWR to give us additional information. As it is right now, we have 30 subunits, and we have 18 to 25 bucks per doze, per 100 does. That's the way it stands. No change will be made unless the board here revisits that and decides to do so after some additional input in May. So all we're doing is saying, DWR, put on your thinking cap, look at each subunit as a hunt in itself. The numbers there, what should they be? And we don't want to get too many variation because it becomes some kind of a problem also. But we're asking them to give us some more additional information that we can add it. So currently, even if this motion was to pass, we're still under the old motion that we passed a year ago, December 2011. Any questions of that? Any other comments before we have had a second on that? Motion to second. If not, I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. One opposed. Be Jake.
Who was the second on that
one?
Bill?
I have one more.
Hey.
Yeah. I have one more update item. I forgot to mention. We're seeing a lot of poaching around the state this fall. a lot of animals. I shouldn't say a lot of animals, but we're seeing a significant number of animals being shot and left. Many of them bucks, trophy animals. It's pretty disturbing to us. Our officers are investigating a lot of cases right now, and the public needs to really help us with this. There's some rewards out there in some areas. Our officers need more eyes in the field. We ask the public to be aware and vigilant when you see people out on winter ranges. Report any suspicious activity. We have a poaching hotline. We hope you're all familiar with that. And with cell phones, we can respond to those pretty quick now. We'll be offering more rewards. It's pretty disturbing that we're working hard to increase buck doe ratios and increase our deer herds, and we've got people out there working against us. And so we need the public's help. The only way we can be effective in our law enforcement efforts is with the public out there helping us. So I needed to mention that because it's pretty disturbing what we're seeing right now.
Thank you. Now going back to the agenda. Item number 5 is a board variance request. That's time certain at 1 o'clock, which means at 1 o'clock we need to be back here after having a lunch. And so we're going to require any of the olds that want to be here just prior to 1 so we can start at 1 o'clock because that is time certain with those people. That's already been set with them. And with that, we'll move into our regular agenda, taking item number 6, Bucks, Bulls, Once in a Lifetime. Anise, if you'll come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you mentioned, I'll be presenting the Bucks Bulls Once in a Lifetime seasons and some changes. I'll start off with the 2012 deer hunt recommendations. First of all, as you all alluded to, this coming year in 2012, we will be starting our unit by unit hunting on general season units, and the 30 units have already been, the hunt boundaries have already been set and approved by the board. So this is basically just an opportunity to set seasons on those units, and we'll come back in May and have our permit numbers approved by the board as well. So our archery season will be August 18th through September 14th, basically similar to what it has been in the past. There's really not a whole lot of changes to the season dates as they were in the past. The muzzleloader season will be the 26th of September through October 4th, and the any weapon season will be October 20th through the 28th. Okay. Moving to elk. Again, these are general season dates for the elk hunt. The archery spike bull elk will be August 18th through the 7th. This is a 21-day hunt. The reason this spike bull hunt is a shorter hunt by 7 days than the any bull hunt is, as you're aware, spike bull units are the same units where we hunt limited entry with archery equipment as well. So by shortening the hunt by 7 days, it gives those folks that drew a limited entry elk permit the opportunity to hunt those 7 days closest to the rut without any interference from the spike hunters, and that's the reason for that being shorter. The any bull season will go as usual, 8/18 through September 14th, a 28-day season, and then the any weapon elk will be October 6th through the 18th. The muzzleloader season will be October 31st through the 8th, through November 8th, and then the youth any bull season is usually during the rut, September 15th through the 23rd. Now, there's also a late youth any bull season that only takes place in the northeastern region. That's in a small area in the northeastern region where this hunt is used to both allow youth to harvest some bulls that are not available during the regular season that come off of private land onto public land during that time frame, and also helps the region deal with some depredation issues during that period. And that's why this hunt is so long. It's a 46-day hunt. It starts the 1st of December and goes through January 15th. Okay, some recommended changes to some of our hunt boundaries and new hunts and such. Some of the statewide changes that we would like to recommend is to allow those who draw a youth any bull permit to be able to also harvest either a bull or an antlerless elk. This gives those youth that draw that permit an opportunity to harvest. For some of those youth, it's their first big game hunt, and it would be a good opportunity to harvest if they're able to take either an antlerless or an any bull. We're also recommending removing the split from the bull moose hunt. Currently, that hunt starts and then it shuts down while the muzzleloader deer hunt takes place and then opens up again. Because of new legislation, we're able to run it clear through that without having the muzzleloader hunters have to wear orange. So we're recommending just having a straight hunt through. So this would add 9 days to the moose hunt. It being a once-in-a-lifetime species, it's a good opportunity for those folks to have more time in the field. We're recommending also discontinuing the buck bull combo hunt in the northern region. This hunt was initially started to try to move some hunters from the general season deer on public land units to some of the private land units to basically just shift hunting pressure. Since we're going to unit by unit, we can do that more effectively by just setting permits on those specific units. And then the elk units also don't exactly coincide with our deer units, so this would make it a little bit more difficult to do a buck-bull combo, and that's why we're recommending discontinuing it. And we're also recommending discontinuing the over-the-counter statewide youth archery permits. For those of you that don't recall, a couple years ago we added those about 1,500 permits to that. After the drawing is done, youth can go and just buy those over-the-counter and hunt statewide. Since we will no longer be hunting statewide for archery, it makes this, a little bit harder to administer. And we also did not see a lot of people taking advantage of that. I think statewide we sold about 200 permits over the counter. So there is plenty of opportunity for youth to draw on these units now that we've gone to unit by unit. So I don't think this is even needed anymore. The youth opportunity is there if they choose to take it. Okay, some regional specific recommendations. The southern region is recommending a new limited entry late any weapon elk hunt on the Ponsagant unit. As you may be aware, most of our limited entry hunts have a late and early rifle or any weapon season. The Ponsagant up to this point has only had the early season. They are starting to see some animals that are on the unit later in the season, and this is a way to allow hunters to have an opportunity to hunt some of those animals later in the season. We're also recommending a new nanny goat hunt on the beaver unit. This unit continues to be above objective or the number that we would like on that unit. This will help basically get that population to objective by hunting some female goats. The southern region also would like to clarify the Thousand Lakes boundary. Basically, this is just an attempt to align it with neighboring San Rafael and Henry Mountains unit boundaries. Basically, it's just to make the boundaries more consistent. When we started looking at the unit-by-unit hunt boundaries, it became clear that those boundaries just were not lining up, and this is just an attempt to clear that up. Okay, the southeastern region changes. The Henry Mountain bison hunt boundary, this is a change to deal with a couple of things. One of them is the bison have moved into a portion of the unit that is currently outside the unit boundary, so this would allow hunters to be able to access that area and harvest animals that would not be available if this boundary was not changed. And it also clears up the boundary between the national park there and the unit itself. So basically, the national park boundary becomes the boundary of that unit. A recommendation to change the 9 Mile Range Creek unit to an any bull elk unit. This is one of the things that was on the action log. And the region has met with folks on that unit, and their recommendation is basically to change that. In the past, it used to be limited entry on public land and any bull on private land, which made it fairly complicated. This would just simplify it, make the whole unit an any bull unit, and allow people to hunt that way. Also, they're recommending changing the Dolores Triangle limited entry muzzleloader elk hunt, the season dates on that, just basically to overlap, to avoid overlap with a rifle hunt that we found happened last year. Northeastern region, they're recommending a new bison hunt on the Bookliffs unit. Basically, this is not the whole Bookliffs unit. It's just the northwestern part of the Bookliffs, basically to deal with some bison that are coming off the nearby Ute tribe. There are roughly 200 to 400 bison that are using that area, and there are some bulls and cows, so you know, this would give an opportunity for us to harvest some animals on that unit before we actually start hunting the entire unit with the bison that we've transplanted there. Also, there's a recommendation to change the Uinta Basin extended archery boundary. I've actually given you an update to that when we took that out to the regions. There was some recommendation to make a slight change to that. I gave you a map there, and we are actually recommending that change that the region made. You know that. So basically, the reason for changing that is to reduce some conflict with the Diamond Mountain Deer Unit. That boundary used to go up fairly high on the foothills, and they were also harvesting possibly some mountain deer. So this change basically restricts that boundary a little bit, makes it target those areas where we actually need it to be targeted. The third recommendation is to change the youth late elk hunt boundary. Basically what this does is expands the boundary a little bit to include a little bit more area in that region. That expanded boundary will expand opportunity for youth and also help the region deal with some depredation issues in that area. Northern region, they're recommending a change in the Crawford Mountain portion of the CASH unit, basically making that an any bull unit. For those of you that are not familiar with that area, it's basically east of Bear Lake to the Wyoming border and north to the Idaho border. Some elk have moved into that area. That area is not the greatest elk habitat, so the elk are using primarily agriculture for what they need, and making that an any bull unit will basically put pressure on those animals and you know, have them move somewhere else where they can be you know, not using as much agriculture for their habitat. They're recommending a new any goat hunt on the Willard Peak unit. Basically, this is another unit where our goat populations are increasing. That's the feed. In any case, this will help basically split the hunters into two hunts, so we can add hunters without having the crowding issues. That one is also one where we have changed our recommendation on the hunt dates. So our new dates for that hunt will be basically the early hunt will be September 10th through the 23rd. The late hunt will be September 24th through the 14th. And then the nanny hunt will be October 1st through the 14th. Through the public process, you know, it was brought up that those hunts were maybe too short for a once-in-a-lifetime hunt. And the biologist on that unit agrees. And it passed, I think, two or three of the racks as presented by the Utah bow hunters. Okay, third recommendation is expanding the extended archery boundary in the northern region to the shore of the Great Salt Lake. Basically, right now, it's bounded by I-15 as the western boundary, so this would take it to the eastern shore of the Great Salt Lake. Basically, this is to help deal with some nuisance and depredation problems in that area. It would also increase opportunity for archers in that extended archery hunt. Okay, some key dates for the upcoming drawings. Basically, the big game drawing for bucks, bulls, once in a lifetime, and dedicated hunter applications. The application period will be February 1st through March 1st, 2012. The application period for bonus points or preference points, those folks that may not want to put in for a drawing but do want to put in for a point, they actually can go all the way up to March 8th. And also, if you want to withdraw an application, you have till March 8th as well to do so. The results should be posted by May 31st, 2012. The current dedicated hunters unit choice deadline is January 13th, 2012. So basically, those folks that are already in the dedicated hunter program can choose their unit, and they will have a deadline of January 13th to do so. The dedicated hunter coordinator will be sending letters out to all those folks to make that process clear to them. Shed antler and shed horn season dates. Basically, you have to have an online course completed and a certificate printed out to be able to go out and gather shed antlers between February 1st and April 15th. The rest of the year, you do not have to have that certificate, but it's only required during those dates because those are the dates when the wildlife are more susceptible to being harassed. Dates when hunters may purchase or sell big game of its parts. Antlers, heads, horns, and legally taken big game may be bought or sold February 15th through July 31st. And then untanned hides of legally taken big game may be bought or sold August 1st through February 14th. Lifetime license holder questionnaire and unit selection deadline. Unit selection deadline will be March 1st for lifetime license holders with this new unit-by-unit approach. Those that fail to choose a unit will just basically have to see what's available after the drawing and then pick one of those units. Okay, there are some disabled hunter general season hunt extension dates that we'd like to recommend as well. These are extensions that happen annually. These are basically folks that are permanently disabled have to apply for a COR to have these dates. And those dates are for archery deer. It's a preseason extension, so basically they get to hunt before the rest of the folks, August 13th through the 17th. The muzzleloader season for deer, also a preseason extension, September 21st through the 25th. And the any weapon season, again, a preseason extension, October 15th through the 19th. And then archery elk is going to be the same as the archery deer, August 13th through the 17th. Muzzleloader any bull elk, a postseason extension, November 9th through the 14th. And then the any weapon any bull elk is September 15th through the 23rd. And they can also hunt during that special northeastern region youth hunt as well within that boundary. The muzzleloader spike elk is a postseason extension of November 12th through the 16th, and then the any weapon spike elk, again, another postseason extension, October 19th to the 23rd. That's my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Anise. Questions from the board? Jake?
Is Justin Shannon here?
Yes.
Good morning, Justin. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Jake?
Can you explain that boundary change on that bison on Henry's a little bit to me?
Yeah, so the southwest portion of that bison boundary change is just to allow hunters more of that southwest access there. We've had bison that have actually gone out of the boundary, the current hunt boundary, that are still on the unit, and so we're just trying to lengthen that to give hunters more access. And then on the north end of that boundary change, it's just to make Capitol Reef National Park boundary our hunt boundary. We met with them. That was a request they had. We were fine with it. Just add clarification to that. So that help?
So on the southern southwest part of it, if we had hunters hunting where they probably shouldn't have then?
No, but we've had bison.
Had bison
that
in
just
there?
Weren't accessible.
Okay.
So yeah.
Thanks, Justin.
Any other questions from the or the board?
Just a clarification on the shed collection dates. You're closed, I assume, between February 1st and April 15th. Is that?
No, it's not a closure, but in order to be out there gathering antlers, you have to actually go online and take a course that kind of, you know, it gives you a lot of do's and don'ts, and then you have to print out that certificate and have it with you if you are going to be out during those dates.
Okay, so is there any time when it is closed?
No, there is not.
So it's open all year round,
right.
But during that period, there are some restrictions that people
right.
have to follow, and they have to have a permit.
Right, and that's an annual thing. You have to do it every year if you're going to do that.
And just to reconfirm, all of the RAC recommendations on the Willard hunt for goats and Northeast region motion on the extended archery boundary are now incorporated in your proposal.
Correct.
So, yeah.
So, Ernie, just to clarify then, if we accept the division's proposal, that's part of it. We don't have to make a separate motion to,
yes.
deal with those.
And Anise, the only thing I didn't see there, probably for good reason, is that there's no reference to the Northeast Region Management Buck Hunt on...
Yeah, that one was a recommendation to put it on the action log, so it's not something we're recommending. It would take, you know, quite a major thing to actually have that on that unit. So
that's fine. Okay, do we have any questions from the RAC chairs? Silent. Questions and questions only, not comments from the audience. Anybody have any questions from the audience? Okay. Start with the RAC chairs for their report, but prior to let me comment these RAC chairs. As I read through the minutes, I really appreciate the way you guys conduct RAC meetings. Some of them can be quite contentious, and it seems like you have them well under control, so I appreciate your efforts there. We'll start with you, Steve, over here from the Southern Region.
Sure. Chair, we had essentially two motions. One to return back to statewide archery that failed, 9-2, 9 opposed. And a motion to accept is presented with the Willard Peak amendment that's been adopted.
Harris, Southeast Region.
The Southeast Region made a motion to accept the division proposal as presented. It passed unanimously with one abstention from agricultural member.
Okay, thank you. Fred from the Central Region.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had 10 members of our RAC present of the 13, and John Barrett, in addition, was representing the Wildlife Board. We appreciated him being there. We had three motions with regard to this presentation. Your regional advisory summary of motions only had two, but there actually were three motions. Those motions were, first of all, to ask the Wildlife Board to reconsider a statewide archery hunt for 2012. We had a robust discussion on that. Ultimately, that motion failed by a vote of 5-4. We then had a motion to accept the Utah Bowman's Association's season change dates for the Ogden Willard Peak goat hunt, and that motion passed 8-1. As was just pointed out, that was subsequently adapted in the recommendations before you today, but we did accept those dates as well in our RAC. And finally, there was a motion to accept the remainder of the recommendation, and that motion passed unanimously.
Thank you, Fred. Kevin from the Northeast Region.
We had three motions related to this topic as well. And as was mentioned, there was a motion to look at amending the statewide management plan to allow for a management buck hunt. So that was, as was previously mentioned, an action log item they were recommending. That passed 5-1. And there was one abstention on that as well. Again, it was mentioned by Anise, there was a motion to change the boundary as we had proposed it for the extended archery hunt, and that passed unanimously. That recommendation has been adopted in the divisions. And then the last motion was to accept all the division's recommendations other than the previous ones.
Okay, Robert Burns from Northern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had two motions on this agenda item. The first motion was to accept the recommendations from the division as presented with the alternative Willard Peak goat hunt season dates. That passed unanimously. We also had a motion to recommend the Wildlife Board reconsider statewide archery, and that failed four in favor, six opposed.
Thank you. I have one comment card. Does anybody else have any comment cards? Maybe if you'll bring them forward. And then the first comment card I have here is Ben Lauder from the Utah Bowmans. Ben, if you'll come forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ben Lauder. I'm representing the Utah Bowmans Association today. I appreciate the opportunity to do so and I'd like to just thank you all for your time and service here today as well. I know that this is no small commitment. The Utah Bowmans Association, in conjunction with the Mule Deer Foundation, the United Wildlife Cooperative, and Bowhunters of Utah, would like to jointly propose that the Wildlife Board reconsider the decision to make archery deer hunters pick a unit in 2012 and instead allow archery deer hunters to continue to hunt statewide in 2012. I forgot to mention I handed a copy of this out to all of you prior to the meeting. You should all have a copy of it up there. The reasons for this proposal are as follows. Number one, the biologists from the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources have stated several times over the past several years that there's no biological reason to restrict the area that archery deer hunters are allowed to hunt. In addition, the number of hunters that are harvesting deer with an archery tackle it's statistically not statistically impacting the buck to doe ratios. Two, as determined in 2009 by the Statewide Archery Committee, statewide archery hunting is what the majority of archery deer hunters want. A little bit of background on that: in 2009, there was a statewide archery committee put together by the DWR. I was a representative on that committee. That committee was put together to address a perceived overcrowding issue in the South. The recommendation that came out of that committee is that overcrowding issue was simply that, a perception by a few, but the majority of hunters, archery hunters, would prefer to continue to hunt statewide. Also, statewide archery would be another incentive to move some of those hunters from rifle and muzzleloader hunters to an archery hunt, which, as we know and as you guys discussed yesterday, has a less of an impact, less of a taxation on the resource. And we believe that if we could move some of those hunters from those higher, more successful weapon types into a less successful weapon type, we can continue to provide more opportunity while maintaining a certain quality and, also important revenue for the DWR. I know that discussion came up yesterday about how that's going to impact the Division of Wildlife Resources. Despite the decision last year to go to unit by unit, the majority of the RACs last year supported statewide archery, regardless of the effort to move to a unit by unit. I understand that some of the RACs have been opposed to that this year, and so I would concede if statewide archery is at this time is not seen as something that we can do, don't throw out the option to maybe go region-wide. Region-wide archery would still be an added benefit to hunting with a bow that would be acceptable to us, and I think still an incentive to increase hunters moving to that lower success weapon type. And finally, and I see this as one of the most important reasons, is keeping statewide archery, or even region-wide archery, would allow that youth statewide archery opportunity to continue. And I'd like to address that specifically for a minute. You know, and he said that there's about 200 youth that have taken that opportunity to purchase that statewide youth archery tag. I see that as a significant number. On Tuesday, I sat in a meeting, a three-hour meeting hosted by the DWR and the majority of the leaders from different sportsmen's organizations from around the state were in attendance as well. The agenda of that meeting was recruitment, and that's all we discussed throughout the entire three-hour meeting was recruitment. And the general theme of the meeting really was, we're struggling with recruitment. And those 200 youth that were able to hunt deer because of this youth statewide archery opportunity, that's 200 youth that would not have been able to hunt deer otherwise. So I really see that as important, and even if that's removed from the rest of this proposal, and we keep that statewide archery simply for youth, even I would see that as a win. Let's do what we can to recruit young hunters where we can, and get them interested in the sport. The other recommendation that is on my printout that I handed out is specific to the Willard Mountain or Willard Peak Mountain Goat Unit. That's been incorporated into the recommendation that I took through the RACs has been already incorporated into the DWR's recommendation here, that they've amended that to match. So I don't know that I need to discuss that too much. That pretty much wraps up my recommendations. Thank you for your time.
Ben? Ed, thank you. Our next comment card is for Ty Bollier.
Good morning. I'm here representing myself, and I just wanted to stand up and thank you guys for readdressing the buck-to-doe ratio and the deer issue, make it more comprehensive to give more people the opportunity to hunt in different ways. I think what we see here a lot of times is people that are chin deep in hunting, that this is serious business to them, whether it be monetary or their hobby. This is what they like to do with their life. And I think a lot of decisions that get made are based on the input from those people. I'm included. And I commend you for taking a look at this and giving the division and yourselves the opportunity to address that segment that doesn't show up and speak in behalf of themselves. So thank you.
Thank you, Ty. Jeremy Hansen.
Hello, my name's Jeremy Hansen. I'm here representing myself. First of all, I'd like to thank the board and the division for all of your time and effort into wildlife. I'd like to say, first of all, I'd like to support the division's recommendation to turn 9 Mile Range Creek into an any bull unit as proposed. I think it makes a lot of sense. I'd also like to voice my support for the joint proposal by UWC, BOU, and UBA and Mule Deer Foundation on the statewide archery. I see that as a great way for opportunity. And lastly, I'd like to I agree with the looking at the 18 to 25 buck to doe ratio. It seems so rigid and across the board. I'd like to, in the division, look at, you know, maybe changing that to try to get some of these tags that were cut back for opportunity for everybody. So that was all. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. Michael Anderson.
Good morning. I appreciate this opportunity to stand before you today and bring you representation from a lot of good people, hunters who cannot afford to take off day's work to be here to talk to you. On their behalf, I'm representing the United Wildlife Cooperative. And first and foremost, I came prepared today to give you a big, long spiel about this buck to doe thing. And so we are very delighted that the board is going to reexamine this issue. That's wonderful news to us. While we are concerned about hunter opportunity, we are more concerned about the welfare of our mule deer, as I'm sure all of you are. One of the many issues that will need to be addressed here, of course, is the concept of carrying capacity. As you know, carrying capacity is a concept. It's not a number. It isn't something that we can go out and measure on a particular unit. Nonetheless, it is plausible and feasible that within the state we have some areas where the deer herd simply is at that carrying capacity. Therefore, a artificial raising of the buck-doe ratio would require that more pressure be placed on fawns on the winter range. Therefore, could be a detriment to deer and counterproductive to our aims in raising more deer here in the state of Utah. So again, I thank all of you gentlemen, and the United Wildlife Cooperative is eager to support you, help you in any way you can. If you form up committees, we would love to have our people come and help in those efforts as we reexamine those issues. Secondly, we would like to give our full support behind the comments already made by Ben Louder of Utah Bowman's Association in asking you to reexamine the statewide archery issue. We understand that this is a social issue, not a biological issue, and we also understand that one of the big social components of this is the concept of fairness. And I would simply say, in this day and age, when we have such demand for tags and such limited resources, what could possibly be more fair than a hunter who willingly cuts his chances of taking an animal? This is something positive. This is what we want. We want people to hunt. And with reduced harvest, that is an asset, a tool that we can actually use. If statewide is not acceptable, then definitely a region-wide approach might work out better. Mr. Louder mentioned youth. Well, as one who is an instructor for the National Bowhunter Education Foundation Bowhunter Ed Program, administered by the Division of Wildlife Resources, and as a coach of 87 members of my National Archery in Schools program, I can tell you, if we lose this important incentive for hunters to set aside their rifle and take up a bow, it will have an impact on the number of bow hunters. And again, this is counterproductive to the overall goals of Division of Wildlife Resources and of State of Utah. Finally, we want to give our endorsement and support for the change of the 9 Mile Range Creek unit and any bull unit. Thank you for your efforts. We listened with a lot of encouragement to the hard work and discussions that you went through yesterday, and we thank you.
Thank you. Now trying to summarize what we've just done, heard. Referring to the bucks and bulls and once in a lifetime, not unanimously, but each of the regions voted in for of the DWR proposal, and adding to that, the Ogden-Willard Peak season change, as well as the extended archery in the northeastern part of the state in the Vernal area. With that, do we have any discussion from the board? Jake.
Justin, can I bother you again? On changing that unit to an any bull unit, can you give us a description of how that came about with the landowners and different people in that area?
Sure. The background, a year ago we were asked to revisit that, and the way it was current, as Anish stated earlier, the way it was there was a portion of the unit where landowners had any bull opportunities on their private lands. The public, it was limited entry. We were asked to look at it. We met with many of the landowners and CWMU operators and sportsmen, and essentially how that broke down is the sportsmen wanted that to go any bull. That was the majority of what we heard, both on public and private land. And when we met with the landowners, the majority of the landowners wanted it to stay limited entry, but they weren't in unison. They didn't have not all of them felt that way, although the majority did. And based on that information, we sided with creating a little bit more opportunity. One thing that we've heard in the region quite a bit is there's not a lot of any bull hunting opportunities in the southeast region, and that's what the sportsmen wanted, and that's what we sided with.
Just another question. Is there just the one CWMU there, or is there more than...
No, there's a few there. There's Roan Cliffs, there's the Nutter Ranch.
So out of those, was the majority in favor of this change, or...?
No, the majority were in favor of limited entry both on public and private land. And the reason behind that is it has been any bull in the past, and these landowners have experienced a lot of trespass issues and different things like that by opening the gates and letting a lot of hunters come in. And to give a better understanding of the unit, landowners own 15% to 20% of the land on the unit, but it's unlike most where they own the high elevation stuff, and the lower elevations are public. And so for public hunters to harvest, they've got to wait for these animals to come off, and that's where the concerns are coming from. So.
Thank you.
Justin, while you're there, let me ask you, when you say come off, I mean they're coming off after the season closes?
I mean, it depends by the year, but, yeah, you've got to have some pretty significant snow to drive those animals off. And that's not everyone. That's not all animals. Mm-hmm. But it's just the majority of the population stays on private land until they're pushed off.
By going to the any bull, is it going to give the public hunter any more opportunity?
Opportunity, sure. I mean, they can go
on it. They can buy a tag.
Yeah, as far as harvest, it remains to be seen. I, to be honest, I really don't know. Those elk are on public or private land, and I'm sure some are going to get harvested just by the nature of it. The way we get harvest now is we have late season limited entry hunts. Now, granted, we don't have a lot of those permits just because we've had times in the past where guys have burned all their points and drew that tag, and the elk still haven't really come off, and we've heard an earful in it. And so to defend limited entry in a scenario like that is tough as well. So,
okay, thank you.
Director?
Yes?
How does that affect that CWMU then? For them to have any bull tags on their property, would they have to pull out of the CWMU?
No, not necessarily. Most of northern Utah, the CWMUs are surrounded by any bull hunting. So, but Justin can talk about the specifics. Some of the CWMUs are already surrounded by any bull hunting. Some are surrounded by limited entry hunting.
Yeah, to clarify, Jake, there's only one south of Dry Canyon, which is where that boundary's at, that is in the current structure where on private land it's any bull, and public it's limited entry. The other CWMUs it's any bull, public and private land.
Steve, go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I didn't want to butt on the discussion there, but I think the point was made there at the end that the majority of that area is any bull already, and the percentage of the area that is going to limited entry is from limited entry to any bull is quite small, but I think that came out in the last exchange.
Hey, Ernie?
For Darris, I remember what I read a few days ago. The overwhelming preponderance of opinion voiced at the RAC meeting was to go any bull.
That's correct. The landowner that currently is on the part that is in limited entry, but his private land is open bull. He was there, as well as four or five of his guides that guide for him, and they all spoke in favor of turning the entire unit into open bull.
And it was a unanimous vote by the RAC to support that?
It was, with the abstention of the one agriculture member who is the CWMU operator in that general area there.
Used himself.
Yeah.
Right. There was, it's kind of an interesting situation that there wasn't, I was at the meeting, and like you say, there wasn't really much opposition to that. There was one person that voiced a little bit of opposition, but I'm not quite sure where that opposition was coming from. It was kind of hard to sort through that. But the RAC member didn't voice any opinion at that time either, and I'm not sure I think he had the opportunity to do that. I think he could have expressed an opinion. Is that right, Marty? Would you say that would be the case if there is a conflict of interest when it comes to the vote? There's still probably is opportunity for a person to make comments about the thing on the rack without taking a vote. Or so I'm not sure that he understood that. I don't know that, but he didn't take the opportunity to voice any negative thoughts about that. And of course they did send a letter to us, and there wasn't anyone else there at the meeting to voice opposition, and I don't think there may not be anybody here today. Obviously, they haven't made any comments about that, but I think that might be part of the problem, was why there wasn't any more opposition at the RAC meeting than what showed up.
Thank you. Any other discussion on this?
I have just a couple of things. I have not been on the Nutter Ranch, and I haven't been on the Tavaputs Ranch. I've been through Range Creek, Lower Range Creek, and that's a great place out there. And I have met with the Nutter Ranch folks. They came and talked to me the other day, and I've also talked with the division folks about this too. And I'm convinced that we have two great groups of people working there. The increased hunting opportunity, I think, is something that is a noble goal, and yet at the same time, I think we need to be mindful of the private landowners and their situations too. They raise a lot of elk and deer and sage grouse and dicky birds. Sorry, Bill, but they do a lot of good work, and they're good partners. And so I think that. And we ought to be mindful of them, even if this change goes through. There are some concerns that I think are valid that they pointed out in that letter. And I think the biggest issues, at least that I was able to glean from my discussion, was the trespass issues and the enforcement issues. And I think that the Nutter Ranch folks are pretty concerned that if this is opened up to an open bull situation, that at least in the first year or two, there are going to be a lot of folks in there, and whether or not they get an elk is one issue, but maybe not the most important one to them. They're thinking there might be lots of trespass situations and maybe illegally killing a deer on the private land, and that raises questions about the division's ability to enforce those boundaries and those kind of things. And so and then also you know, whether or not, my thought, what happens within the first two or three years of the hunters that are going there under this new system, are they getting what they think is a good hunt? Are they being successful? Are they contributing to trying to manage that population biologically with the number of elk that they actually harvest? And so I think there are a lot of things, maybe questions, that we might have over the course of a few years. And I'm wondering if maybe we ought to think about those things a little bit and maybe get a report at some point in time on how those things are. What's the division's perspective after two or three years with respect to these different things? What are the landowners' concerns? Do they fade away in a year? Does the trespass issue become a non-issue? You know, I don't know how that will turn out, but I think it's something that we ought to consider, those two two ranches up there, both great partners and contribute significantly to wildlife in the state. So,
thank you.
I have one question. Does it change the permit numbers when you go open season versus limited entry?
Yeah, well, it doesn't change the permit numbers per se. There are 14,000 any bull permits statewide.
Mm-hmm.
They can choose to hunt there or anywhere else that's any bull. So, yeah.
If it's a limited entry, you have to have a permit for that area.
Right, exactly.
And so it doesn't change the numbers, but it puts a lot more hunting pressure as an open bull.
Correct.
And that's is that an area that has a lot, maybe not a lot, has more bigger animals that people are going to want to go there because my chances of getting the big one are greater there, so there's going to be more pressure there versus
there may or may not. It's currently managed for a 4.5 to 5 year old, so it's actually the lowest that we manage for. So it's mm-hmm. not. I mean, there are big bulls there, no doubt about it. But the access is going to be the issue. So the way usually our any bull units are either access limited. Either because they're wilderness or whatever, or they have a lot of private land. And that's how they are statewide, not just in this area. And that's what limits harvest often on those units. So, yeah, it will have a draw, but access is going to be the limiting factor.
So the private landowner can still, this is private land, this is the fence,
yep.
You're not welcome.
For sure.
And I guess that's the issue of the trespass issue is right. Some people can read. Some people think they can read.
But we have multiple units similar to this in the northern region that have a lot of private land that locks up public land. It's not unique in this situation, I guess, just to keep that in mind as well.
Okay.
Ernie?
I think I first got a little hint of this topic in this area perhaps 10 years ago. On the Northern Region RAC or the Habitat Council. And I think I was told at the time that it was not a new issue then. I'm wondering if I could get one of the gray-haired or no-haired senior DWR guys to give all of the board members a little of the background. I can see at least three of you in the audience, so I'll leave it to you to decide who could best address, I think, the numerous discussions, the numerous negotiations, and the back and forth that's gone on for years.
The problem with that, Ernie, is all of us old gray-haired guys can't remember. I'll start it, but Darris is going to have to fill in the blanks. There's a better chance his memory's better than mine. Going back... there used to be very few elk on Range Creek, and we proposed a transplant. And part of that transplant was to work very closely with the private landowners to get their cooperation. And in the agreement with the private landowners, I think the wording in that agreement said something to the effect that the division will always recommend a hunting strategy where private landowners can benefit, for example, open bull. So the very first recommendation we had for that unit was open bull. That presented some problems. There was some trespass. There was a lot of issues. And then I believe we went to limited entry, didn't we, Darris? And then we even proposed going back to open bull. I can't remember whether we actually did or not, but that met with a lot of opposition. And then we got to where we're at today. Is that how you remember it?
Yeah, I think we started with open bull, went to limited entry, tried to go back to open bull, and at that time the sportsmen wanted the limited entry quality. So I think the sportsmen are the ones that fought back on that, so we never did go back to open bull. And in the meantime, a lot of those private landowners have gone into the CWMU program, which is the obvious solution. There's one landowner that reasons of his own isn't interested in the CWMU program, so he's kind of the one that was the most vocal at the RAC meeting about maintaining either status quo where private land is open bull or the whole unit goes open bull. His interest is in his own property, not the rest of the unit. The public is, with the late season limited entry bull hunt, that's provided more public opportunity than that unit has ever had before. They've extended that. Most of those November hunts end in November. This one goes to January, the end of January, I believe, or the middle of January. And that's kind of guaranteed that sometime in there, there's going to be a storm big enough to push bulls down onto the public land. And not an easy hunt. You got to strap on some snowshoes, and it's a tough hunt, but there are bulls available that time of year on public land.
What are the benefits to the landowner, open bull versus limited entry? Is there a landowner's unit? Does the landowner get any benefit one way or another, open bull versus limited entry? Is there a financial gain to the landowner to be in one or the other?
Well, if it's open bull, the landowner's guaranteed a permit every year because you could just purchase one. If it's limited entry, you'd have to draw that permit to hunt your own backyard, unless you join one of the CWMU or landowner association programs.
And under a CWMU or a landowner, then you get X number of permits, and you can do with those as you want. You can give them away, you can sell them, you can use them to start a fire with. So, and that's why I'm wondering, are the landowners, is it going to be a financial advantage to a landowner to stay in a limited entry versus an open bull?
Yeah, to some degree there would be, especially where these CWMUs may be, or in this case they are, managing for a higher age objective than the surrounding land units.
Mm-hmm.
And so if hunters were killing more bulls surrounding their property, quality may diminish, but that's not the argument here per se because it's a 4.5 to 5 year old unit. But yeah, there's that potential, Calvin.
Are there too many animals there? I mean, an open bull is going to put a lot of pressure, and it's going to thin the herd down. Obviously, I've seen that in other areas. Do the landowners want that, or do they want to have more animals for that bigger selection?
Yeah, this population does have the potential to get away from us. We were above objective for several years. Last year we had really good snows, and our cow harvest, I think we killed 450 cows. We're talking 1,700 elk, and so we're on top of it now. One issue now is the bull to cow ratio is very, very high.
There's a lot of bulls there.
A lot of bulls.
There's a lot of opportunity, and maybe the herd needs to get thinned out.
Yeah,
and going to an open bull would be a tool to do that, if you will.
And the counter argument is, would you get the harvest on if it's open bull and all the elk are on private land? That's the landowner's argument with it. So,
Justin, Mr. King brought up just a bit ago the landowner concern on trespass. Has the region considered that in making your proposal you did?
Yeah, and I want to echo what Dr. King said. These landowners have been great partners to us. They really have, and that's why it became a very tough decision for us, because we don't want to see increased trespass on them either. But what this boils down to is a very social issue. Landowners don't want more trespass, and I sympathize with them. I understand that. We don't want to add additional workloads to our law enforcement. On the other hand, the public's been saying, give us more opportunity. This was an avenue to do that, both of which are very social. But yeah, it came in our decision, and what it really boils down to is we slightly lean more towards any bull that feel their pain.
So the region recognizes an increased enforcement need?
Yeah, and to be fair, we do have a new law enforcement officer that's there to work that unit, and this, in theory, would keep him busy next year with a lot of that stuff.
Okay. Let me suggest that we take this 9-mile open bull as a separate motion discussion, and then we'll capsulize all of the other bucks and bulls and once in a lifetime. Is that all right with the board?
Just a comment. If you do nothing, the recommendation is any bull. So if you want to do something different, you need a motion.
That's right.
If you go either way on this, I hope we would go either limited entry or any bull, but not the hybrid that we have currently, because that's what we're trying to get away from, I guess. So
right now the public land is
limited entry. Right.
And the private is any open.
Bull. Yeah.
Any bull.
Can I make one more point as well? We're not proposing the entire unit. I mean, if you choose to go limited entry on this, and clearly it's your choice, I would hope you wouldn't make that for the entire unit. When you go up 9 Mile Canyon north and east of that, a lot of these are 40-acre land blocks, and that whole unit has never, ever been proposed to go limited entry. That's always been any bull, both on public and private land. So I would hope it would be, if it is limited entry, 9 Mile Canyon south.
And isn't it true that if you went limited entry on that south part of the unit, you'd have to make an accommodation for landowner permits, and there is no landowner association there right now?
Not for this year. There would not be.
Right.
Yes.
Essentially you're locking some of those landowners out of hunting until you get a landowner permit system in place.
Yeah, unless they're in those CWMUs. And if you're a landowner not in a CWMU and we go limited entry, they'd have to draw for next year.
Bill?
I have another subject I'd like to bring up when you're ready.
Okay.
I have another concern, and it goes back to, I guess, back to the trespass and maybe some of the reason why a couple of the landowners are against an open bull, and it has to deal with fencing. Some people think that, hey, that fence is in my way, and I just take my wire cutters and cut through there. That kind of casts a bad light on sportsmen. I know some people think there are no sportsmen in the state. They're just hunters out to whatever. I think some education would be in order by the sportsmen that when you come to a fence, that probably means there's a boundary there between private and public. You need to ask permission, or you need to cross over in a timely manner instead of just cutting the fence. And that may be part of the reason why a limited entry versus an open bull would be in effect, or a reason why these landowners wanna lock it up. They don't want people out in there trespassing for those same reasons.
Can I just say something about trespass too? You know, there's two trespass laws in the state. There's criminal trespass, and then there's a law within the wildlife code that addresses trespass differently. The criminal trespass law was beefed up a couple of years ago, and cutting a fence, Marty, is now a felony, right?
I don't think it's. I'm not sure it's a felony,
The penalty was greatly enhanced, and there's now opportunity for both civil damages and attorney fees that a landowner can recover if someone does that. The wildlife code trespass is tougher in another regard. We can impose a penalty. The board can impose a penalty that is more stringent, at least in the eyes of hunters, than anything, and that's suspension. Many hunters would rather pay a fine or go to jail than have their hunting suspended. Either way, the division takes trespass very serious. And especially trespass that results in taking of an animal or damage to landowner's property, we prosecute those and aggressively. And I just want people to know that. We have zero tolerance for trespass. I know there's some discussion at the legislative level this year of making trespass either even tougher. Sportsmen have really got to get their act together and realize that trespass is not ethical. It's illegal. It will be prosecuted. and the division will be on the forefront of that. We just don't have any tolerance for it, and I want people to know that.
Any other discussion?
Next, a question back to the change of subject a little bit, maybe back to the archery unit by unit, open state, open, you know, statewide or a region by region. You know, the recommendation is they hunt unit by unit with everybody else. The bowmen want to have an open a statewide. There was also a mention maybe a combination or a hybrid of the two region-wide. Would there be would that be a compromise to go region-wide versus unit by unit versus statewide? And I'm just throwing that question out there.
Any of the above are on the table if you guys want to go that route. We can administer it under any scenario.
I think the recommendation is they hunt unit by unit with everybody else, kind of on a fairness issue.
That is our
issue.
Recommendation.
If one group has to do unit by unit, then all groups do.
And just a little background on that. The reason we went statewide with archery initially is to get archers into the sport, basically. Mm-hmm. And we have hit our cap, you know, for the last few years. So that's no longer one of the draws.
No longer a real issue then.
Right. But, you know, if we do want to, you know, if we are concerned about selling the number of archery permits, then that would be something we would consider.
If we move to that one for a sec, I'm in general a proponent of expanding some archery opportunity. And in a number of specifics, I was intrigued by the discussion yesterday of perhaps increasing archery permits as a way of increasing opportunity in the number of hunters in the state. I am frankly perplexed at the shift of RAC voting between a year ago and this round in regards to statewide archery. It was a shocking change that I've never seen anything like that in, I think, 12 years now.
What was it?
Well, a year ago, 4 out of 5 RACs voted darn near unanimously, I think, to go with statewide archery. And we turn around this year without really anything changing. The success rates haven't changed. The number of archers hasn't changed or anything else. And now we've got all 5 RACs rejecting it by a fairly good margin.
To stay with the unit by unit.
So at this point, even though I know my own feelings and inclinations, I'm not ready to do anything. I want to sit back and try and make some sense out of what happened in the RACs and what happened with public opinion.
I think what has happened, Ernie, is under a regional hunting, statewide archery certainly makes a lot more sense. When you go to unit by unit, there are going to be some units that are going to be more sought after, and you could have, you know, hunters, archers, you know, flocking to those. And I think that's what the concern of a lot of folks is. It's just when you go to that, a smaller type, you could have lots of folks just keying, whether it's real or perceived, you could have units that are overrun. And that's why.
Can I just mention one thing about that?
Is it going to skew your data if you go statewide versus unit by unit? I know you want to keep your statistics so that you can get data fairly constant.
Right. So,
is a statewide going to mess that up where everything else is unit by unit?
It will initially until we get a few years of data. Yeah, I mean, that's just the way it goes with wildlife, biology in general. Until you get some background data, it's really hard to say, but it can be done either way, I guess is what I'm saying. It's just it's almost, you know, it's whatever you guys want.
It is what it is, and you can deal with it.
Sure.
because there's not as much harvest?
No,
archery.
There is. I mean, they harvest at a lower rate, but they certainly harvest it, you know, animals. So, but we can factor that in at the percentage that they're harvesting. So, okay. And put that into the equation and then issue permits that way. It would be easier, obviously, the first year if they were all already split, because then you don't have to guess of what the harvest might be on those units. Because if it is statewide, we won't know that first year how many hunters flock to this unit versus that unit.
Could I say one thing about this, kind of going to, along with what Ernie said? I think if we was having this discussion off last year's RAC vote, this would be a very different outcome. This is an issue that's near and dear to my heart, and it's very, I'll be honest with you, it's hard for me to separate my personal likes and wants from what the process is producing today. And as much as personally I would like to see things be a little different, I don't know that I could in good conscience vote with a proposal that five racks voted on and voted down. And so, you know, I appreciate the archery clubs, the, you know, the state organizations, been part of Yuba and Temp Archers for years and years. Loved archery hunt. I appreciate their involvement and their passion and being here all the time, but I think that, you know, as this process evolves, if they stay involved, look at some opportunities. You know, we had a good discussion yesterday about maybe how we could expand a little archery opportunity. I think there's some growth there, but I can't see how, personally, I don't see how the board could go against a recommendation that the RACs took action on and voted down 5-0.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Jake.
I would like to try a motion.
You're welcome.
With the input of the Southeastern RAC, I would like to make a motion that we approve the Bucks and the Bulls once in a lifetime 2012 season dates as presented.
You're talking about just the season dates.
And the whole recommendation.
Okay, that's
second there. So clarification, that would include the archery unit by unit as presented and the range crick open bull as presented. Is that correct?
That would include the 9 mile range crick area, but nothing with the archery group. It would stay the way it is now.
Which is
unit by unit.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, do we have a second? Yes.
You seconded that, didn't you, John?
John seconded. Discussion.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I have a separate, a completely distinct topic, which is a subset of this that I'd like to address that has not been addressed yet. Chunk. And I'd be perfectly willing to do that after this motion. Recognize there may be one little other exception, possibly, if the board decides afterwards. Or I could do it ahead before, in which I support.
We have the motion on the floor. Are you saying what you're thinking would be changing the motion currently?
I could do it as an amendment, and we could vote on the amendment. Buck bowl combo. I'll do it as an amendment. Then if I can get a minute, I'll briefly discuss and then make a proposed amendment. Back more than 5 years ago, suggestion of the Cash Deer Working Group, we created a buck bull combo hunt in the northern region. The primary purpose of that hunt was to move public land hunters out of the two big public land units in the northern region, the Cache and Box Elder, predominantly the cache, which are by far the most crowded number of hunters per acre, public acre, hunts anywhere in the state. The intent was to try primarily to make another opportunity available that would move some of those permits out of the deer hunt, the general deer hunt, and put them at a different time in a different location. So based on the model of the old high country buck hunt that used to exist back in the 90s and I think even in the 80s, Cache Deer Working Group proposed to the Northern Region RAC that we create a buck bull combo hunt. It was unanimously supported by the RAC and subsequently adopted by the board. In the process, however, we also added some other units into it, and it was a good move. The private land units, I believe, were added in. And so out of 2,000 combo tags, about 500 of those go up to the North Slope based on 2010 data, as I understand it. That's 500 less, I think, public land hunters that are hunting elsewhere, because, generally speaking, getting access on the private land units isn't something you just do by walking up and asking. The hunter satisfaction on that hunt has been extremely high since the day it was created. In fact, some of my good friends in the division prefer to hunt up there to anything else, for good reason. Well, I was quite surprised when it went through the whole process and nobody said, hey, wait a minute, we're going to be adding hunters back on the public land units in the northern region. But that's a big concern to me because I've taken a lot of complaints for a lot of years. There's a second factor. In some or many or frequently years, those deer that are available during the combo hunt are in Wyoming before the deer hunt starts. These are almost additive tags in some years, added opportunity and additional good deer for a sportsman to pursue. So I'd like to propose that DWR add a North Slope deer hunt this year, coincident with the bull hunt. Now that could be done either of two ways. My preferred option, obviously, would be to still make it a combo hunt. Oh, by the way, the division also, during the RAC presentation, said they'd support going back to that as soon as we get to the alternative hunt schedule discussion here again in a year or two. Second way it could be done besides a combo hunt would be just issuing some number of tags, perhaps 500 or perhaps something else. I leave that to the expertise of the biologists on the North Slope at the same time as the deer hunt. Final reason is we've got more than enough disgruntled hunters right now, for whatever reason. Some of them are unhappy about this, and some are unhappy about that. Well, in my mind, here's 500 hunters that are really happy with what they're doing, and we don't need to piss them off. Pardon me. We don't need to irritate them when we have an easy option that will keep them quite happy. So, with that having brought something up out of the side, I now wish I hadn't kept my mouth shut during the RAC process, and I'd talked to some of the people I know that have talked to me and said, why the heck didn't you get out? Why didn't they come out to the RAC and voice their opinion before the process started? So at any rate, I invite the division to respond before it's...
You can invite the division to respond.
So, I guess our recommendation would be not to add a hunt. And the rationale for that, if we start doing, you know, treating specific units separately, we could be doing that all over the state. I would offer a way to deal with that is the muzzleloader hunt on that unit happens when deer are still there. We could put more permits into that and offer opportunity without adding a hunt during the rifle elk hunt. There's also other options we could do given that under the current proposal. And, you know, and not saying that it's not a good idea or it shouldn't be done, I think I would like to approach how we hunt deer versus early versus late more comprehensively as we took out a proposal a few years back, and that would actually deal with that unit and other units that are similar to that unit. So, again, it's not a bad idea. It probably would add a few hunters in there, not a substantial number, but if we want to approach one unit at a time, it becomes fairly cumbersome to do that whenever somebody comes up with a good idea. I think it should be done more comprehensively. That being said, if it were voted on today and that's the way we could go, it could be done without any issue.
Thank you. Now I'm confused.
I've heard Anisha's comments and I recognize them, but the one problem that I see is if I told 500 rifle hunters they have to go buy a muzzleloader now to do the same hunt they've been doing, they aren't going to be real happy. So Anisha's got a comment, and then I'll make a motion.
Yeah, and one thing you also need to realize on this unit is now, because of the unit by unit, it includes the Daggett and Three Corners. So if that hunt were to take place, we would have to make a new subunit, which is the Summit, for that to take place on only, because the northeastern region does not feel that would be a good hunt for them on that in that area as well.
So the hunter has two tags in his pocket, perhaps. He's got one for an elk hunt that covers east and west, and he's got one for a deer hunt that covers the west.
Right, so that's another.
Doesn't seem too hard to me. I hunt upland game, and I got birds that I can take here and I can't take there.
It's not hard, but it does require us to have a specific unit boundary for that summit that's different from the 30 units that we already
It'd make a 31st unit.
It'd make a 31st unit only on that early hunt. So it does add in some complexity that wasn't there before.
Hey, let me. You got two more minutes, Ernie.
Okay, I'll just make a motion then that we add a deer hunt coincident with the any bull hunt in any manner you wish to do it.
Well, yeah, we have a motion on the floor.
That
right
is
now.
The amendment, then. And
Jake, are you okay with that?
You just have to vote on the amendment.
Before you vote on that, I just want you to be aware. Now we're going to 31 units, and that's a little problematic. Now we're going to have two North Slope units, one that you can hunt in early October and one you can hunt in late October. I can tell you there's other units like that that would like that around the state.
And that's what I was trying to, I guess, having
more of that, and pretty soon it's.
And that's what I was trying to get at when I said earlier that I don't like doing this, because then we start doing this on every unit that someone knows and or has an affinity to hunting at that time of year or whatever. So,
saying it's a big push to see if we can get back to the revised hunt schedule topic.
That would be my preference, but
we don't want to do that for several years, do we?
No. I mean, we could, if all goes well in 2012 with unit by unit, we could try to propose it for 2013. But I'm not going to think that far ahead right now. But I really don't. I don't like when different units just get chunked out and are Because as Jim mentioned, there's a lot of folks out there that want those, and I've held them back this year and said, you know, we're doing a lot of changes. Let's, you know, hold those. We'll get together, have a meeting, figure out how comprehensively we would redo it statewide and have those little different hunts here and there. We've got a big change coming ahead. I would rather not do this change right now. If we want to put more hunters on the North Slope, when the deer are there, we could certainly put more permits during the muzzleloader season. Muzzleloaders, our success rates are almost identical to rifle. And
you wouldn't need a motion to do that?
No,
because
exactly.
We're going to bring a recommendation to the board. We could incorporate that.
When you say we're going to bring a recommendation, what do you mean by that?
Permit. When we do permit numbers, yeah.
That can be dealt with the permit numbers instead of having a change.
Load that unit heavy on the muzzleloader side.
Okay. We have one motion on the floor to accept the DWR's presentation, and that has been seconded. And we've had Ernie bring this up here. I think we need to address the first motion. And Ernie, in all fairness, I'm not disagreeing with you, but if it was to me at this point in time, I would say this year is not the year to do that. You need to put that on an action log and bring it back and maybe make a change next year, because there could be, as you say, other areas in the state that want the same attention. But let's address this first motion that's on the floor.
You made that as an amendment. Was it seconded? I'm going to say if there's no second, then it dies for a lack of second. And then I guess you could bring it up after the motion and put it on an action log to look at down the road. Keep him from jumping on you. Okay.
Well, okay.
I have just another question before we move ahead with this. It's back to the Range Creek issue. I just want to ask the question. I'm interested to know what the results of the change would be if we go to this open bull, any bull system. And I'm interested to know what the effects are on the landowners and on the division and the hunters. And so I guess my question is, without making an amendment to the motion to say that we suggest that you do that or have you do that, is outside of an amendment to do that, is there, you know, a process that you guys go through that would allow that kind of information to come back to the board so that we could be aware of how things are working out in that situation relative to the trespass issues and the hunter success and the number of animals that are harvested and that kind of thing?
Let me answer that from a law enforcement perspective first, Kevin. Mike Falks is back there too. We've heard your request. If you wanted to solidify that to make sure it happens, you could make it an action log item, but Mike could also make it a priority for law enforcement through a, what do we call our plans? Action plan. We could do an action plan on that unit that would specifically address the trespass issue. So either way, we heard you, and we'll move that way. But if you want to make sure it doesn't fall through the cracks, you could do it as an action log item, that the division prepare an action plan to deal with trespass on that unit.
Okay, well, it wasn't just trespass. That's just the one issue. It was more comprehensive than that.
However you want to word it.
You just want a report back on the numbers that were taken and any trespass issues associated with that.
Yeah, that and the hunter satisfaction, those kind of things as well. You know, 2 or 3 years down the road, they may get out there and they haven't killed any elk. So.
Mike, that's all I was going to say as well. That's a very appropriate action log item after the fact to put it on the action log that 2 years from now for us to report back on whatever it is you want us to report back on. I think that's kind of what the action log is meant for.
Okay. So. Yeah, it's kind of hard to vote again. Going back to what John has said,
on the harvest side of it, we do collect that data, right. Satisfaction, harvest success, all that. So we could certainly put that together and have a report.
Okay. It's kind of hard to vote against something that's gone through all five racks and been approved and very little opposition against it, and none here today specifically. So anyway, that was my question.
We're back to the original motion. We had a second, and we've had Ernie offer an amendment to that motion. Will you give me time to run to my Robert's Rules of Orders, man? Yeah. That's what we need to do, is if there's a second to the amendment, we'll entertain it. Otherwise, we're going to move forward. So do we have a second on that amendment? Appears to be no second. Okay. Let me restate this original amendment motion. That original motion was to accept the DWR's Bucks Bulls Once in a Lifetime proposal as presented, including Northeast Region extended archery boundaries and the 9 mile. Yeah, that's part of there. We don't need that. So just accept as proposed. All in favor?
Aye.
Any objection? Being unanimous, thank you. Mike, do you want to add that to an action log item?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion that we add to the action log a request to have the division monitor the situation in the 9 Mile Range Creek, now soon to be open bull unit, and then really whatever time frame they feel is appropriate, whether it's 2 years or 3 years, to come back with us with a report that addresses those issues of trespass and law enforcement and hunter success, hunter satisfaction, those types of things, the general kind of information that they're collecting, just so that we have an idea of what's going to be going on out there.
Second.
Okay.
Second.
Mike's made the motion. We add that Range Creek issue to the action logs. Ernie has seconded it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous. Thank you.
Do this without a break?
That's what I'm trying to wonder how to do. At 12 o'clock, we're cutting here. I don't care where we are, because we got a 1 o'clock deal.
Yeah, that's right.
So maybe we'll take a quick 5-minute, 10-minute break at the very most. You got 7. Men, we need to get started with this next presentation so we can be out of here on time for lunch. Our next item on the agenda is a CWMU management plan, and we'll have Boyd give us that presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated, I am here to talk to you about the CWMUs for 2012. We have some information here that we've been able to put together summarizing the application/management plans and permits. We had 87 CWMUs that were that required renewal for the 2012 hunting season. 83 CWMUs actually requested renewals, which left 4 that have dropped out of the program. 1 CWMU in the division is recommending the application be denied, and 1 CWMU we have a split recommendation with. Other issues I will bring up to you as I go over the various regions. We had 10 CWMUs that will be requiring renewal in 2013 and 15 in 2014. We had 9 CWMUs that are new for this year. They're requesting CORs, which will bring us to a total of 116 for the 2012 hunting season. So with that, the northern region has 70 CWMUs in it, the northeastern 5, central 12, southeastern is 16, and the southern with 13. That brings us to, and we stayed pretty constant, even with adding some of these, we've had some dropout, we still stayed pretty constant with approximately 2 million acres enrolled into the program. And 97% of that is all is private land. Of that, there's 444 private landowners that are currently participating in the program, which is a good chunk. An overview, there are 104 CWMUs that are requesting buck deer permits, 61 bull elk, 30 bull moose, 13 buck pronghorn, and 3 are requesting turkey permits. With the change, we're finding that a lot of our CWMUs that were taking turkey permits are dropping out of the program when we went to over-the-counter. It just made it easier for them to get their permits over-the-counter, and so we are finding fewer and fewer of the CWMUs are asking for turkey vouchers. This year, that would bring us to 1,943 private permits for deer and 254 for the public. And so on for the various species all the way down for a total of 2,940 private permits, 488, which is approximately 17% of the permits would be public draw permits. Moving on to the regional issues, the first 5 that you see here on this table, Thatcher Mountain Park Valley, Curlew Valley, Bluebell, and Middle Ridge are all new CWMUs in the northern region. They're all deer CWMUs. Junction Valley is requesting a change to their management plan. They've a change in boundary, and they're a deer and elk CWMU. In addition, to in the northern region, we had, after the RAC process was completed, we had a phone call from a concerned public individual regarding his hunt, on a moose hunt on the Ensign Peaks CWMU. With receiving that call, I asked the region to take a look at it, and they went up and visited with the Ensign Ranches. They looked at the data, and their recommendation was is that we would also make this recommend this change, that they would drop from instead of receiving 5 permits this year, they're requesting 4 permits this year, and it would go to 2 and 2 for a 50% split. And then the 2 subsequent years, there will be requesting 3 bull moose permits, which would go to a 3 and 1 split, which would still keep us to a 60-40. And, no. 2 and 1. Yeah, 2 and 1. I'm sorry. So, and then... So our recommendation is to go with that change. And then in the northeastern region, these are 2 new CWMUs. There's the Aviniquin and the Buckhorn Ranch. And then there's the Skull Valley North that we've recommended a denial. They're a deer CWMU and do not qualify. They do not have enough acreage. In our request for plat maps, we were unable to obtain those plat maps.
Boy, can I ask you a question real quick? So they're over 1,000 acres short. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And then there's the south in the southeastern region, Deer Haven is a new CWMU. Mini Mod had a boundary change, and Spring Creek Dodge CWMU also had a boundary change. And so they required changes to their management plans, and then we'll move to the southern region. We have the New Harmony, which is a new CWMU. The Johnson Mountain Ranch is asking for a change. They wanted to change their deer permits from 27 and 3 to 9 and 1. They also want to drop their season variance request from a hunt that goes to the 10th of November. They want to go back to the usual October 31st. Then there's the Alton CWMU is requesting a change in their management buck deer permits. They want to go from 4 and 1, total of 5, to 6 permits, 5 and 1. The division is recommending that we stay with that we actually go to a 3 and 1, which is 4, which is in using our formula to determine permits for CWMUs and landowner associations. That is what they qualify for. Questions?
Any questions from the board?
Boy, the change in the northern region meeting that came up on Sardine Canyon, is that incorporated in your presentation?
No, it's not. We'll the division has no problems with the change, and we'll stick with that. We'll go with what the
but it
the
will
RAC,
need to be addressed. RAC, okay.
Yes.
I got a question for you, Boyd. If I remember right, having worked on your committee a few times, the Spring Creek Dodge was kind of a challenge with the boundaries and whatnot. Of these changes, I noticed there's quite a change in the amount of acreage and whatnot. Are we making progress there, making that a little easier to enforce and to define and keep posted? Is that coming?
We're doing our best. It's what I call a dog's breakfast down there with the boundaries, and it's going a lot of different places. It's a CWMU that fills a function down there. We had a certain amount break off, and that's just the reason for the decrease to be another CWMU. We've invited a landowner that had some issues and some concerns into the Spring Creek Dodge CWMU, and so we've taken the best that we can, the best approach that we can with the boundaries on that CWMU.
Still a dog's breakfast, as you'd say.
Still a dog's breakfast, yes.
Boyd, can you explain the formula for how these permits are came up with?
When the program first started, we didn't have a formula. We looked at it and went, okay, you have these permits, you have these permits, and that's how it went out. Later on, as we started getting more and more into the program, we knew we needed to develop a formula or a way for us to be able to make a good split, so that because every permit that we take out away from the public and give it to a CWMU, that reduces an opportunity for a public person to draw that permit or to have that permit. And so we developed the system of where we take the size of the CWMU and we make it into a proportion of the overall unit, and then they get a split of the overall permits that come right off the top. So that basically the number of permits they get is proportional to the size of the CWMU. And then we take that, and then we split out the permits from there. And we've been doing that since 2004. And then we've looked at it twice since then, 2009. We looked at it and presented it to the RACs and the Wildlife Board. In 2010, it was presented as an action item and approved and taken to the CWMU Advisory Committee. And the Advisory Committee came back and recommended that this is the good system, this is the best system to develop the permits, numbers of who should get what, and we went on from there. And so, and what also, those CWMUs that were already getting those permits, we were to leave them and let them continue to get that number of permits, but try to bring them within the, the family or the way we do it as we go along, the best way that we can.
So your permits are mainly on acreage then?
Yes.
Is there anything in there that deals with the type of habitat that they have?
The problem dealing with that is that it also causes us to have issues with one landowner over another landowner. I have the same thing he's got. Why can't I get this? And this goes back to issues with the way that New Mexico does it, where they provide a multiplier. So they get the number of permits, and then they have a multiplier that goes on to that, and they have a great deal of problems annually with landowners saying, well, I've got this habitat, he's got that habitat, mine's better than his, and therefore I should have a multiplier of 1.75 rather than 1.1. And so to stay away from that and to be fair to get a distribution of permits and not take a lot from the public, that's what we felt was the best way to go.
Thanks, Boyd.
Let me ask you, Boyd, just go on that again. So, just simplistically, let's say we got 10,000 acres. Part of that acreage is public land, possibly, and part of it, maybe most of it, is private land. You take in the percentages of public and private as a part of the whole to come up with that?
Yes.
What are those breakouts in? Or do you remember off the top of your head? I mean, what's the level, the difference between those percentages when you say, okay, if a guy's got 90% or if he's got 50%?
Well, if he's got 90% of that whole unit, then he gets 90% of the overall permits. And basically that's how we figure that out.
That's
how they get the proportion that's there.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from the RAC?
Boyd, did the auditors have any comments on the CWMU split?
I beg your pardon?
Did the auditors have any comments on how the splits are being made for the public?
Yeah, I can read you their recommendation. It says, we recommend that DWR review the allocation of CWMU permits to ensure that the public receives an equitable share of the antlered permits.
See, our concern there is that when we have this amount and we try to build an equitable, fair system, that we, for every permit we take away from that bunch and put into the CWMU that they don't qualify for, we take away an opportunity from the public.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments from the board? If not, or go to questions from the RAC. Any questions from the RAC chairs? Any questions from the audience? Okay, if there's no question from the audience, then I'll take comments from the audience, and I have one comment card. Mr. Wade Heaton.
Are we going to hear from the RAC, Mr. Chairman?
Oh, shoot. Yes, Wade, excuse me. I've jumped
Sorry,
on the
Wade.
Line. Okay. Let's start over here in the northern region, should we, Robert?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our motion was to accept the division's recommendation with the proposed change for the Sardine Canyon CWMU, and I can read that change that they're representative proposed.
Okay, if you would, maybe.
Number one, change the season dates to September 11th through November 10th. Number two, change the private public vouchers to 13 and 2 in year one, 13 and 1 in years 2 and 3. That's a 90-10 split of 39 for the CWMU and 4 for the public. And number three, change the public hunt dates to for them to choose either September 11th through the 15th or the first 5 days of November. Now, the region was supportive of their proposed change, and so we went ahead and incorporated that in the motion.
And that then become part of their DWR's proposal?
No, it, well.
It's addition to.
It's an addition to the.
Okay. Kevin from the Northeast region.
The RAC voted with very little discussion to pass that unanimously as presented by the division.
Hey, Fred from the Central Region.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. you'll see from the minutes that we did have some discussion from Ken Clegg with regard to Scovalley North and South. That did not generate a motion, and so there was a motion to accept the division's recommendations, and that passed 8-1.
Hey, Darris.
Southeastern region voted unanimously to accept the CWMU management plan and permit numbers for 2012 as presented by the division.
Steve?
Chairman, we had two motions. Wade made it to our meeting, and subsequent to that, we had a 6 in favor, 5 opposed, so it passed. The motion to keep the permit numbers for the Alton CWMU the same as 2010. That'll make more sense to you after Wade's comments, when we made someone from the region to discuss that as well. But the overall motion to pass everything else as proposed carried unanimously.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Before we go to the public, can I ask another question from Boyd?
You may.
Boyd, on the Sardine Canyon proposed change, can you give us a little more info as well as what Robert explained to us?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. And also, I need to further discuss that. It's been brought to my attention. It's kind of slipped past me. That 13 and 2, and then to a 13 and 1, 13 and 1, doesn't equal the 90-10 split. So we would have concern regarding that. If anything, it would need to be a 13 and 2, 13 and 2 to be the 90-10 split once they get over that 10th permit. Other than that, we were happy with the change, request of change for the season dates. That works, not a problem with them requesting that variance. The region felt that that would be a good thing to do for that CWMU with deer coming into that area. But we do have some concerns with the number of permits on that.
Any other questions? Not well. Now we'll take comments from the audience. Wade, if you want to come forward. State your name.
Wade Heaton. I'm representing the Alton CWMU. Gentlemen, I very much regret taking some of your time today on such a small issue. I regret being the only CWMU with a split recommendation. And I'm not doing it out of spite. I'm doing it out of just a principle of fairness. We've talked a lot about fairness here today. And don't want to bore you with the details too much. Hopefully you understand this issue just a little bit. For 2012, the Alton CWMU is including an additional 1,240 acres. We didn't feel like that justified requesting an additional trophy permit, but we did want to request an additional management permit. So in 2011 and in 2010, there were five management permits total, 4 private, 1 public. We requested an additional permit, making it 6 total, 5 private, 1 public. Truth of it is, I don't really care whether that additional permit goes to public. It could be 4 and 2 for all we really care. But because we included the additional acreage into the unit, we felt like we were justified an additional permit. And you'll hear from the division a little bit, and I've talked with them at length about this issue. And it comes back to the comments Boyd made in the onset about the formula that the division is starting to use with regard to this. And it makes it very tough. We're the only CWMU in a premium limited entry unit. We're the only CWMU that has a management hunt and receives management tags. But there's 116 CWMUs, and it makes it very hard. Originally, we were one of the original CWMUs, and so as we set this formula up 20 years ago to decide how many permits the CWMU receives versus the Ponsagon as a whole, we used a lot of factors. Well, obviously, Boyd's got a very complex job now with 116, and so they've tried to simplify it. Boyd used the word fairness to try to keep it fair. I think more accurate, at least in my mind, might be simpler. The formula is simpler. I don't know that it's necessarily fairer. And in our case, it could be argued that it's not. I certainly don't want to sit here and try to reinvent the wheel, and I don't really want you guys to have a discussion about the formula. They have grandfathered in some of the CWMUs like ourselves that received a larger percentage of permits versus the percentage of acreage. And there were a lot of great reasons why, and I won't bore you with those right now. But we just felt like we were justified a little bit in one more permit, even if it ends up being public. The Southern Region RAC recommended the 4 and 1 staying the same as 2010, 2011. That would be fine with us as well. Anyway, thanks for your time.
Thank you. That's the only comment card I have. Is there anybody else that I haven't received a card from? You will fill out one of these and over here on the table.
I'm the president of the CWMU Association and executive director.
Okay, state your name.
Okay.
When you get done, go fill out a card and give it to me.
Can I do that after the fact so I don't waste your time? Thank you.
Right.
My name is Ken Clegg. I'm the executive director of the CWMU Association, and I've heard the comments and just wanted to extend our appreciation as an association for the decision-making and the work that goes into making those 116 units work. Thank you. I know they're complex, and I know it's a difficult thing. We're grappling as best as we can to help Boyd, you know, with those permit splits, and we really are trying to make that be a good quality public experience as well as private experiences. The way I look at it is you're investing in 2 million acres of private ground that's great wildlife habitat. And so the efforts that we're making is trying to fine-tune that and make that process so that it doesn't go into to cabin lots and those types of things. So I, again, just wanted to extend our appreciation collectively as a group and thank you for all of your efforts there.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else?
I have a couple questions, Dale, before you get to a motion.
Okay.
Boyd, I'm a little confused. Our recommendation is 3-1. Was that also on the Alton?
Yes.
Management bucks? Was that also a recommendation last year?
No. Last year, the board, the well, I'll tell you what, I'll let the region.
I'm just wondering why we're recommending something less than they had last year. Somebody can answer that.
We recommended something less than they had last year because that's what they qualified for. And so we're presenting
what changed that they don't qualify for it this year.
Well, last year, the Wildlife Board, let's see if I can remember how this went. Okay.
Teresa might can help you. She's right
about
there.
That. Because it was a new program. It was just getting started. Our recommendation was actually zero. And the Wildlife Board chose to give them 4-1 is what can't transpired on that one, and therefore we came back with the recommendation this year to go with what was qualified for.
Okay, I understand that part. Now the next part, if the board chooses to go with 5-1, those two tags are then deducted from the public permits, the public management buck permits.
Yes.
So the public gets two less.
Yes.
The CWMU gets two more.
Correct, yes.
Teresa, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Thanks, Teresa. I say something in addition on the Sardine Canyon. If I may. Chairman? Okay.
Yes.
It comes to 44 permits, and if you follow down the split on 44 permits, in order for them, over the three-year period, to equal a 90-10 split, which they are requesting, the public has to get a minimum of 5 permits. So, therefore, the first year they would get 13-2. The second year they would get 13-2, and the third year they would get 13-1. And that would be our recommendation.
Can I ask you, going back to Alton again, as of question in my mind, last year did you say the recommendation was zero, but we voted 4-1?
That was the first year. The first year that we had it. And was that last year or the year before?
2009, and then 2010 and 11, we did the same?
In 2000, I'll let Teresa answer that.
Yeah, 2009, I have written that the division recommended zero, and the Wildlife Board granted them a four for the CWMU and one for the public. I think last year, I believe we just went along and stayed with the 4 and 1. They actually, per our guidelines, qualify for 3 and 1.
Guidelines based on acreage.
Yes, acreage. And there are some special provisions as far as the grandfathering for their trophy permits and based on some habitat improvements and some other things that give them more than they actually qualify per acreage.
Okay. I'm going to ask Wade a question then. Wade, did I hear you say you don't care if that's public or private?
That would be fine. We really don't care. It's not an issue of who gets the permit. It's just an issue of fairness. Additional properties are being included in the CWMU, and so in theory, that additional property generates additional permits. If it ended up being a public permit, that'd be fine.
Thank you.
Could I ask Wade one more question? Sorry to keep bringing you back up.
I don't mind.
The region, the RAC down there went with 4 and 1.
It did.
Is that correct?
That
would be status quo with last year.
The last two years.
So, and you've added additional acreage this year.
We don't want to be difficult. If it ends up being 4 and 1,
I'm asking you. You're not. I'm asking you.
It'd be great if we got an additional permit, whether it's public or private. To me, that's what's fair. If it ended up being 4 and 1, being the same as last year, that'd be fine too. At this point, to be very honest, I'm almost sad I stirred the pot a little bit. we put additional property into the CWU and the division, recommends fewer permits. You know, I'm sad I asked, really.
Thank you. We ready to address this, Mr. Chairman?
So let me just ask one question. So originally when this was first put into the program, they were allocated 4 permits, 4 and 1,
yes.
Even though I guess subsequently the acreage guideline was established. Is that right?
No, the acreage guideline was established long before that time. And our recommendation was 0. Let us take a look at it, see how the program's going to work, see what, you know, who's going to get what permits, how we're going to work it, because it was a brand new program. And so, therefore, our recommendation was 0 to start out with. Their request was to receive 5, and they were granted that request.
And that the Wildlife Board granted that? Is that what happened?
Yes. And then the next year, they stayed with 4 and 1, and we didn't really oppose that at that time. And now we can see that there's a steady increase taking place, and we thought, we better get this where it's supposed to be according to our guidelines, and we better be following our guidelines.
And so they've added some extra acreage this year, and how does that compare with
The extra acreage did not qualify them for more permits.
And how much short are they according to the acreage guideline? 500 acres, 1,000, 2,000? I'd
have to have time to go over that with the region. They need to have 4.3.
They have 4.3% of the habitat on the unit. So they're over-allocated as far as trophy and management permits.
Okay, so just 1,000 acres then relative to the entire...
I don't have the number of acres they'd need to actually, per acreage, bring them up to another permit. I could run that, but...
But it's substantial when you're comparing it to the entire region.
Boyd, do you have something additional?
We were able to get a hold of the operator and the owner of the Sardine Canyon CWMU, and he's fine with the 13-2 and 13-1.
Okay. Now going back to the Alton unit then. So it's 3-1 was the DWR proposal, 5-1 was the operator's proposal, and they're willing to go back to what they had the previous year, 4-1.
RAC proposal.
Yeah, that's the RAC proposal. Okay, I'm ready for discussion and a motion from the board then. And just to let you know, we've got 10 minutes to get this accomplished, man.
Could I get one discussion item first here on Alton? That formula has been through almost two generations of CWMU advisory committees. Having done that for 4 years, got another Pandora's box if we start granting exceptions to each of the 116 CWMUs. I think the acreage formula is clean, it's simple, it clearly does not give favoritism, it avoids jealousy. So I'd like to stick with something that is clean, understood, and agreed upon for years, as opposed to opening the door with other free-for-all.
May I ask a question about that? How many other CWMUs have had or are having similar problems, if any? How many of them have more permits than what they have acreage for?
There's a lot of CWMUs that have been in the program for a lot of years before we developed this, and therefore there are a lot of CWMUs that are currently receiving more vouchers than what they qualify for. So you could say that they are grandfathered in, and to go back into the program and say, okay, we've made a change now, so now we're going to take away the permits you've been getting. We felt that that wasn't the right way to go, that we would go through there, and as they made changes to say they dropped out of the system for a year and then came back in, they would fit back into our guidelines, and they would get far less permits than they are getting. So I would say there's probably a high percentage of CWMUs that have been in the program for many years that are getting more permits than probably what they qualify for, only because they got them and we're working them through the system and making changes as we go along. Every new CWMU is required on a limited entry unit to follow this system that we have and we've developed and worked on.
Okay.
This is the only CWMU with management buck permits, right, Boyd? Yeah. It's the only one in the state. It's one of a kind.
Ready for a motion?
Yeah. When you make a motion.
I would, first off, having listened to the RAC recommendations and seeing that the Southern RAC is okay with status quo and kind of the information that we just got, that there's a lot of other CWMUs out there that may technically be over-allocated, but they're still at status quo. I would be inclined, Mr. Chairman, to make the motion that we allot them the same number of permits they had last year, which would be 4 and 1. And the reason I do so, instead of going with 3-1, I think if we're going to look at a CWMU that's over-allocated and say, well, we're going to bring them into line, if we're going to do it with one, we better do it with all of them, and then we can have a big 3-day meeting and listen to all their complaints. But I would think that I think a fair thing to do to the Alton in relation to the rest of the CWMUs and also leaning on what the RAC recommended, I would make a motion that we go with the 4-1 recommendation, the same allocation they had last year.
Is your motion just for that particular CWMU or to accept all of them?
Just for that one.
I'll second his motion.
Okay, the motion's been made and seconded by Jake that we accept the proposal as passed by the Southern RAC, where the Alton unit would have 4 private and 1 public. Is that right?
Yes.
I think it is. All in favor of that? 1, 2, 3, 4 in favor. All against? 1 against. Okay. It passes. Did you... How'd you vote, Bill? I said five. Okay, you said fine. 5-1, excuse me. 5-1 in favor of?
In favor of 4-1.
That's right.
5-1 in favor of 4-1.
5-1 in favor of 4-1. Thank you, Director. Okay, are we ready to make another motion for the remaining CWMU?
I would, having worked with Boyd on this committee for a number of years and been to a lot of these, I can appreciate the hassle and the mountains of paperwork that he deals with, the maps and everything, and it's a tough job, and I think he does a great job, so I want to say that first. And then, Mr. Chairman, I would also make the motion that we accept the balance of the proposal as presented.
With the Sardine Canyon?
With the Sardine Canyon, yes. Yes, yes.
Okay, a second on that motion?
With the Sardine Canyon, what?
Is that the 13-2?
Yeah, we better clarify.
13-1? Change in season dates to 9-1 to 11-10.
Yes.
And permits.
13-2.
Your permits of 13-2, 13-2, and 13-1.
Yes.
For the next 3 years.
Yes. Thank you, Ernie.
So, Ann, have you got that? Got it? Okay. No, I have a second on that. Did I get a second? Calvin seconded. All in favor? Unanimous in.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. There was one other.
Okay.
They proposed one other change, and that was the public hunt dates were September 11th through the 15th or the first 5 days of November. That was the third part of their proposal.
We include that in
Did we motion? Not include that?
That will be in their management plan. That will be online, and they can do that themselves. On those, they can set up those dates themselves with the public.
We don't have That's to take part. We don't have
we
to take board action on that.
61-day season with the season extension, and then they can select from within that of the days that they can give the public or the private.
Are you comfortable with that, Robert?
I'm okay. Satisfied. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we've completed that item of our agenda, I believe, and it's time we'll go to lunch. Take a lunch break.
You do, Boyd? He could probably do landowner.
You want to do years. Landowner?
I can get you to lunch, depending on what happens
okay.
On 12. So.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay. On the Landowner Association voucher recommendations for 2012, we received 15 applications, and the division is recommending approval of all 15. Where there are no split recommendations with any of the landowner associations, we have 125 deer vouchers, 4 management buck vouchers, and 93 elk, and 9 pronghorn. And the division is good with all of that.
Any question from the board? I have one I'm going to bring up to you.
Yes.
And that is the variance on the Diamond Mountain landowners.
Okay, that will be presented by their RAC.
Okay.
Chairman.
All right. Any other questions? Any question from the RAC chairs? Any question from the audience regarding this? If not, we'll have the RAC chairs report on their motions. Darris, let's start with you this time.
The Southeast Region voted to pass unanimous with one abstention due to the fact that that member was a member of the Landowner Association. Accept the division proposal as presented.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. In the Southern Region?
We adopted as recommended unanimously.
Okay, Fred, how about the Central Region?
Central Region adopted the recommendation unanimously, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and let me take Robert first.
Okay.
Oh. Our motion was to accept the recommendation as presented. It was unanimous.
Okay, now Kevin, you had a change.
Yeah, the motion to accept the division's recommendation presented was passed unanimous. There was a second motion to grant a variance on the land, the Diamond Mountain Landowner Association. It was kind of interesting. There's a little discussion in the beginning. We have a few RAC members who weren't familiar with that and what that exactly involved. That's a recommendation they've had for, I think, 16 or 17 years. That's a variance they've had. After some discussion about that, it was passed 6-1. Beth Hammond was voted against it, and we asked her to explain her opposition. And we got a rather emotional explanation, her frustration with that variance. And I think that's captured in the minutes. But she's had a lot of negative feedback from the public about the inability to access that landowner property. But it did pass 6-1.
Okay, could I ask you to just briefly describe what that variance is for the board that's not familiar with it?
You know what, Boyd can help me here too. This is an unusual landowner association. There's 157 landowners, I think. It's a huge number, and so difficult for them to manage. This variance, and it's allowed for in the policy, grants them the permission to allow access on a landowner by landowner basis, not the whole association. Is that, did I capture that right, Boyd?
Yeah, it's in rule. It's according to rule. Where a landowner that sells that voucher does not have to allow public onto his property if he chooses not to.
A variance.
With the variance,
with
yes.
The variance. With the variance, yeah.
Without the base rule is that they have to allow.
Yes. Yeah, the base rule, and as you read through the base rule states that they have to allow somebody, a public hunter, on their property for every voucher that they sell. And with this variance, they do not have to do that.
Okay. And additional background info on that, though, the region's told us for years that there have been no problems, no complaints, that this variance has worked well.
You know, it's part of the challenge with this is, you know, we ask for hunter satisfaction. And it's always ranked really high. Of course, those are the people who got granted access. So what we don't measure is the people who were not granted access. And things have changed a little over time, too. There's more and more of that land being leased, the landowner, the hunting rights being leased. And we've had problems in recent years with illegal marking of property boundaries, even on public land. So it's changing over time, and it's changing in a way that's made some of the public less happy with the situation up there.
Anybody feel like they need any more clarification on that? It is something they've had for, I think, 17 years. It's set in our minutes. Okay, thank you. Comments from the audience? We have no comment cards. So in summary, all of the RACs voted for the landowner presentation as given, presented by the DWR, and the Northeast region included their RAC, voted in favor of this variance for that Diamond Mountain Landowners Association, which allows the Diamond Mountain landowners to be choosy as to whether they let a public or private on there. We have heard from their personnel that for years that has been working quite well, and I heard it again this year. So with that, board have any discussion? And if not, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move we accept the recommendation on the Landowner Association as presented by the division.
Okay. With the variance?
With the variance for Diamond Mountain.
Okay. Do we have a second on that? John seconds. So we do have a motion made to accept the DWR proposal, including or adding to that the variance for the Diamond Mountain landowners. It has been seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Looks like unanimous. You're opposed? Sorry. 5-1 then. With that, we will take a break for lunch, and we will need to be back here in our seats at 1 o'clock.